Our next case is Charles Reed Cagle and others versus the Mathers Family Trust, case number 2011-SC-496. Both parties ready? Case is set for an hour argument and a couple of housekeeping matters. Please, when you start your argument, tell us who you are and who you represent. And the petitioners will have to keep track of your own time, half an hour to a side. And what I said about the iPads, I want you to understand our briefs and our notes are on the iPads. We're not surfing. So with that, let's go forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court, Paul Schwartz for the petitioners. Form selection clauses do not violate the anti-waiver provision of the Colorado Securities Act for two main reasons. First, nothing in the act prohibits plaintiffs from suing outside Colorado. So a plaintiff who sues outside Colorado is not out of compliance with the act. And so a contract in which a plaintiff agrees to sue outside of Colorado does not cause him or her to waive compliance with the act. Second, suing outside Colorado in no way enables a defendant who otherwise would be liable under the act to escape liability, to avoid compliance or get away with non-compliance, for the simple reason that non-Colorado courts can and do enforce CSA claims just as the plaintiffs are asking the Colorado courts to enforce their California, Illinois, and Vermont Securities Act claims. The public policy that controls this case is the policy in favor of freedom of contract generally and in favor of form selection clauses in particular. Parties are allowed to agree where and how to resolve their disputes, and promises like that should not be tossed aside, or should be tossed aside only if there is a clear showing that a form selection clause violates public policy. And we're talking here ultimately about a question of statutory interpretation, 1151-604-11. And more particularly, what does compliance mean? What does it mean to waive compliance? Not rights, not benefits, compliance in 1151-604-11. I submit that compliance means doing what the law requires, not doing what the law forbids. That's the plain English understanding of the term. And there are two ways to think about that when it comes to form selection clauses. One question is, does the mere act of suing outside Colorado somehow cause a party to be out of compliance with any provision of the act? The second question is there some reason to believe that the contracted forum won't enforce the substantive provisions of the act? And so one arguably could say in that circumstance that the effect of a forum selection clause would be to waive compliance with the act. Those are really the two questions that the briefs in the different arguments that they address go to. With respect to...
Can I ask you, it seems like their argument, at least in part, depends on the fact that you've taken a position that it's easier to get there in under Texas law and the Fifth Circuit, that a joint venture, as this case was, I guess, is not a security. So I'd like you to kind of talk about that.
I'm not sure I
understand. I think they're arguing public policy that whether the agreements in this case come under, would be termed, would be classified, I'm sorry, as a security, that Colorado law would be more favorable to the consumer than Texas. That's basically what I think they're arguing. Maybe, and if I'm wrong, you can certainly correct me.
I don't know. I mean, I disagree that in terms of the substantive merits question of whether the general partnership interests in this case constitute securities, I disagree that one state's law is more favorable than another. But really, my main point is that's beside the point, because they are permitted, if the forum selection clause were enforced here as it should be, and the case were in Texas, and it could be in a state court in Texas, or it could be in a federal court in Texas, and they brought a Colorado Securities Act case, that Colorado Securities Act claim would be before the Texas court. And that Texas court, state or federal, would apply Colorado law to determine that is it a security question under the Colorado securities.
I wanted to ask, that confused me too, because in your reply brief you point that out. I thought these were Texas partnerships.
They are Texas general partnerships, that's true.
And therefore the law of Texas would apply, right?
Well,
is that wrong?
I think it's...
Judge Hoffman said that in his district court opinion. And
when you say Texas law applies, it depends what issue you're talking about. Would Texas law apply to the construction, interpretation of the Texas contract? Absolutely.
Okay.
But if the factual and jurisdictional basis for a Colorado Securities Act claim, namely the purchase or sale of a security in or from or to Colorado, if that exists, so that a Colorado Securities Act claim exists, then that claim can be brought in Texas or anywhere else, just as the plaintiffs, in addition to suing under the Colorado Securities Act, have sued in Colorado under the Vermont Securities Act, the Illinois Securities Act, the California Securities Act. And as to the Colorado claim, Colorado law would apply. And so all the cases that they say they like and that we have a fight over that come out of Colorado, the various Colorado Court of Appeals cases that they have cited, would be applied by a Texas judge, state or federal, applying a CSA claim. So with respect to what I identified as the first issue, whether the mere act of suing outside Colorado somehow causes a party to be out of compliance with the act, the answer is no, because there is no provision that requires a CSA claim to be brought in Colorado. The two statutes that they have cited, 1151-706 and 1151-604, I mean, we've addressed various points in our briefs that relate to them, but I think the central one, the central point to emphasize today is none of those provisions purports to create exclusive jurisdiction over Colorado Securities Act claims in Colorado. And therefore, it is simply not non-compliance with the act to sue outside of Colorado. And this really is the key distinction between this case and the Lambden, Morris, and Ingold cases that the plaintiffs have cited. The statutory language of the anti-waiver provisions are materially different. In the Wage Claim Act and the Security Deposits Act anti-waiver provisions that the courts addressed in Lambden, Morris, and Ingold, those provisions precluded parties from entering into an agreement that purported to waive any right or any benefit that employees in one case, tenants in the other, were given under the Act. Rights and benefits are things that a party may invoke, but they don't have to. And so basically what those anti-waiver provisions said was that to the extent these acts, the Wage Claim Act and the Security Deposits Act, give plaintiffs a choice of doing something, you can't have an agreement that takes away that choice. Well, the CSA's anti-waiver provision doesn't say that. It does not prohibit parties from agreeing to waive procedural rights or benefits. It just prohibits parties from agreeing to do something that the Securities Act forbids. Or you can't, it says you can't excuse parties from the substantive provisions of the Act. And this distinction that I just described is exactly the distinction.
Where's the language that says it's limited to substantive provisions? Because I thought it just said that you couldn't waive the compliance with any provision of this article or any rule or order under this article. And where are you reading in this limitation?
Well, I think that is the plain understanding of waive compliance, or that you can't have non-compliance, because compliance...
So you read compliance to be a limiting term as opposed to a more general term?
I think compliance means doing what the law requires and not doing what it forbids, and that's really what this court has said compliance means in the Woods-Small versus RTD
case. Sure, but you were just making the argument that you thought there was a distinction between a procedural and substantive, and I'm just wondering where you're reading that.
Well, I think that's the necessary interpretation of the plain language of compliance, what compliance means, and, Justice Rice, I would add that that is the articulation that the U.S. Supreme Court gave to this precise language in the Rodriguez case. So again, but again, I think it's not just non-compliance with the substantive provisions. As I said, there are two ways there could be non-compliance. If the act of suing outside of Colorado caused the party to be out of compliance with the act, then I agree that that would be a waiver of compliance. But that's not the case here, because there's nothing that precludes a party from bringing a CSA claim outside Colorado. In fact, plaintiffs have acknowledged that they could do that. So I'm just saying an additional way that reading compliance, frankly, broadly, that one could conceive of waiving compliance or non-compliance is if one brought a claim outside of Colorado, let's say pursuant to a forum selection clause, and even if there were no Colorado Securities Act provision that said expressly, hey, you can't sue in Texas, I'm acknowledging that if the effect of suing in Texas was that the provisions of the Securities Act would not be followed, that Texas would blow off Colorado law, then I think an argument can be made that that would be non-compliance. That's not the case here,
but either. But it would follow, therefore, that we have to, in order to understand what this statute meant, the compliance, the non-waiver statute, look at the other 49 states to see how they might interpret their statutes with respect to securities, wouldn't it? Say Wyoming had different kinds of statutes.
No, with respect, Justice Rice, I don't think that's right, because I think how the forum state would interpret or imply their own security statute is entirely irrelevant. The only question is whether if...
Well, that gets us back to Chief Justice Bender's question, which is, you know, what I always think is kind of an abyss, which is this whole conflict of laws problem. And so say that you're in Texas, what is to say that Texas will in fact apply Colorado law?
Well, I think what is to say that is that that's what the Texas courts have said. So for example, in the Coca-Cola case, the Texas Supreme Court specifically said that as a matter of comity and full faith and credit, the rule that they follow, as this court follows, is that they recognize and enforce statutory claims under the laws of other states. In Coca-Cola, there was a narrow exception that court stated for antitrust claims that clearly doesn't apply here.
Let me just ask you the ordinary, logical follow-up. Why, given that that's where your argument is going, why then don't we have to look at each of the states to see whether, in fact, that's the position they're taking? I mean, not just Texas, but other states.
Well, I think the answer to that is in the first principles that apply to forum selection clauses, which were articulated by the United States Supreme Court in the seminal case of Bremen, which I don't believe this court has had the occasion to address, but every jurisdiction that I'm aware of, I mean, around the country has accepted these basic principles, as has the Colorado Court of Appeals in the Adams Reload and the Edge Telecom case, which is this. Forum selection clauses are presumptively valid. And the reason they're presumptively valid is because there is a strong public policy in favor of freedom of contract and stability of contract.
With all due respect, I think you're wandering just a bit far from my question, though. Why don't we have to, in order to work out the logic of your position, look at each and every other state to see what position it's going to take?
With respect, Justice Rice, I'm answering that, and the point is that under that fundamental analysis, the Bremen analysis that has been accepted, because of that presumptive validity of forum selection clauses, forum selection clauses should be deemed void, should be ignored or invalidated, only when there is a clear showing that they are inconsistent with public policy. So I would say that the burden in any given case is on the party, and should be, on the party challenging the forum selection clause to show that it would, that it's inconsistent with public policy, or that there is a problem with it. So, if in a different case, let's say there were a case involving Wyoming, and I'm just making this up, but it so happened that Wyoming, unlike Texas, had a public policy that said we will not consider claims under the Securities Act of some other state. Then the party, in that case, a party challenging a forum selection clause can say, hey, in this situation, these forum selection clauses should be deemed void, because the effect of enforcing the forum selection clause is that the Colorado Securities Act claim goes away because Wyoming has a public policy.
Right,
but that's not the case here. And
I know it's not, but whenever you're talking about public policy arguments, that's exactly what we're trying to get into, is to look at this more broadly. And so you're saying, well, in Texas, that's not going to happen, and so there's no problem. We don't need to interpret the anti-waiver clause broadly or in a way contrary to your position. Let me just put it that. But say it was Wyoming, say it was Missouri, someplace that had a different kind. Isn't that exactly the concern that Justice Rivera had when he wrote the Court of Appeals decision?
What Justice Rivera expressed is just a general unjustified, groundless skepticism that Texas would apply the Colorado Securities Act. Now, I think that skepticism is actually contrary to what Texas has said. I pointed to the Coca-Cola case, in the Marmon case, which we've cited in our brief. That is a case from 1968 where Texas actually considered or was presented with statutory claims under both Texas statutory law and Colorado statutory law. It involved the wrongful death acts. The court said, hey, there wasn't enough of a connection to Texas for Texas law to apply, but they applied the Colorado Wrongful Death Act. And in for example, the Wynn case from 2010, Texas App Lexus 10059, the Texas Court of Appeals considered a case under both the Texas Securities Act and the Mississippi Securities Act. So it is clear, it is overwhelming in my view, that the Texas court does consider securities acts of other states. And it's common. I mean, that's what the plaintiffs have done here. They expect the Colorado courts to consider Vermont, California, Illinois claims. In the Huffington case, for example, from the First Circuit that we discussed in our brief, the court, it was a Massachusetts case, emphasized that it is common for Massachusetts Securities Act claims to be considered by other states. We have cited numerous cases, the Hughes case out of New York, the Dineen case out of Ohio, the Rogers case out of Florida, the United Heritage case out of Idaho, all cases where non-Colorado courts considered Colorado Securities Act claims. So whatever concern Justice Rivera had was not based on any Texas law that indicated there should be a concern. And then and that raises sort of the fundamental question: does this court accept the Bremen principle that has been adopted essentially everywhere and start from the premise that forum selection clauses are valid and should only be overturned if there really is a strong showing. If you can say it is more probable than not that Texas would not apply the
the clause survives. If this didn't involve a Colorado Securities Act alleged violation, you know, we'd be in Texas, right? I mean, so we're really talking about applying Colorado public policy with regard to securities regulation to this specific circumstance. We wouldn't be voiding the clause, right? We'd be choosing the public policy that is clearly expressed that as a whole, this case could be brought here. Now, I'm trying to understand why your client is so insistent on changing it when this is queued up for trial.
Queued up for trial? I mean, this case is not queued up for trial. It was a motion to dismiss. There hasn't even been an answer.
But there were some issues that your client won on, correct?
Yeah, we won. The trial court dismissed the case. The Court of Appeals reversed that dismissal. The merits have never been addressed in this case. If so, Honor's asking,
is this kind of like a change of venue to another state?
Obviously we're in state court, so it's not like federal court where you can just transfer venue.
Well, we're not looking at any statute of limitations problem here because it wasn't filed.
Sure you are. Sure you are. Of course you are.
I have no idea what the statute of limitations implications would be.
I'm sure you do.
Actually, I don't. Okay. I've never thought of it, Chief Justice.
I'm surprised. Could you try to answer Justice Rice's question? How do you want us to read subsection 11? You know, any security to waive compliance with any provision of this article. What I took your brief to argue, let me just tell you, was that when you sort of mentioned this, that we're not supposed to look at the merits, which I think makes a lot of sense. But you did make this procedural substantive distinction. So how do we interpret that? You want us to follow the United States Supreme Court? Today, I haven't read the Federal Securities Act on that particular section, so I don't know if this is the precise wording the same.
Absolutely. Okay. I mean, I think there's a difference between reference to the commission, you know, the Securities and Exchange Commission that doesn't apply here, but it is materially identical.
Okay.
And the way I think the court should read the plain language that says you can't have an agreement that purports to waive compliance with any provision of the act. That means you can't have an agreement that says that a party should do something that the Colorado Securities Act forbids them from doing, or that precludes a party from doing something that the Colorado Securities Act requires. And I say that because that is the plain meaning of compliance. And I acknowledge that we all look at it both in a practical way. And a practical way that courts have looked at that issue is the following. If the case is brought in the contracted forum, is the contracted forum going to ignore, in this case, Colorado law. Because if they do, in a broad interpretation of compliance, you can say that the effect of enforcing the forum selection clause in that case is to not have compliance with the act. But that turns on the notion that the contracted forum is not going to apply Colorado law. And that is just not the case. There's no basis for that here. With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve the balance of my time.
You may.
May it please the court. Good morning. My name is Elizabeth Moran, registration number 16119. I represent the respondents, the plaintiffs below. The plaintiffs filed this action in Colorado court in Arapahoe County District Court, which is one of the places where the defendants operated their investment promotion and selling activities. The defendants want this case in Texas based on the choice of law and choice of forum clauses in their venture agreements, which go hand in hand. The Court of Appeals agreed with the plaintiffs that the forum selection clause is not enforceable because it conflicts with important public policies behind the Colorado Securities Act, that it may operate to deny the plaintiffs a forum to even pursue their Colorado Securities Act claims, and would violate the anti-waiver provision of the Colorado Securities Act, which prohibits any contract provision to waive or modify compliance with any provision of the Act. Now, the public policies behind the Colorado Securities Act are several. First of all and foremost, it's for the protection of investors. Second, it's to maintain public confidence in the securities markets in Colorado. And finally, it's to avoid burdening participants in those markets, and that includes investors who invest in Colorado-based securities. It's a remedial act, and as such, it must be broadly and liberally construed to further these goals. The Colorado Securities Act creates a number of requirements for securities in Colorado, and at the same time creates rights and remedies for violations of those provisions. And the Act prevents these rights, remedies, and provisions from being waived by anything that an investment seller can put in his contract.
Counsel, can I just stop you there? Because I guess I'm wondering, is your argument that those public policy, the recitation of public policy goals that you've just given us, does that mean a forum selection clause is always void? Are you basically saying that those policies lead us to conclude that other states would not do a good enough job enforcing Colorado or would choose not to enforce Colorado law in all cases?
Yes, if that's the case, if the forum selection clause would result in the Colorado Securities Act not applying.
Or well, do we have to go through a case-by-case analysis in each instance to figure out if that would be the case? I mean, this is just the kind of flip side, I guess, of Justice Rice's question. Would we have to go through a case-by-case analysis of every Colorado Securities Act case to figure out if the forum selection clause could be enforced, or are they just... Are you arguing for a presumption that other states would never be able to enforce it like Colorado courts would?
I'm not arguing that it would presume that it wouldn't be enforced. Looking at it from that standpoint, looking at what other states would or would not do with the Colorado Securities Act is one way of determining if there would be a waiver. But there's a different way also of looking at this, and that's with what rights the Colorado Securities Act does provide to investors who choose to sue in Colorado. Now, of course, there are many state securities acts, and oftentimes acts of other states are implicated where you have different parties from different states. But what the Colorado Securities Act does, and which most state securities act do, is to permit those suits under that act to be brought in that state. And counsel has talked about compliance in terms of prohibiting a party from doing what they're required to do by the Act, but I think it's more. I think it's requiring a party to do something different from what the Act permits. Looking as the Court of Appeals did into different contexts, how the courts have looked at the Wage Claim Act and the Securities Deposit Act in the Landon, Morris, and Engel cases, we see a very similar structure here. We have remedial acts that create rights, they create private rights of action, they create rights to bring action in court, and don't specify this must be in Colorado or this may not be in any other court. And they have anti-waiver clauses that are very similar to the Colorado Securities Act. In each of those cases, this court and the Court of Appeals held that those acts gave the plaintiffs rights to enforce the rights under those acts in Colorado courts, if they choose to do so. They might choose to go somewhere else, but if they want to enforce those rights in Colorado courts, that right is protected under the anti-waiver clause. There is really no reason to look at the Colorado Securities Act any differently in this context. Council has pointed up some differences in the language of the anti-waiver clauses, that the CSA talks about compliance with provisions, whereas the other, the Wage Claim Act and...
But Securities Acts, you know, there's a provision in there that you know, interpreted consistent with the federal securities. Almost any security is really involved multi-jurisdictional issues, right? So it's a little different than the other anti-waiver cases, don't you think? Or how do you deal with that?
I don't believe it's really different, Your Honor, because this is a state securities act, and while it does say that provisions of the the actually coordinated with federal provisions of the provisions of the Federal Securities Act that are referred to herein, there's nothing in the Colorado Securities Act that refers to the federal anti-waiver statute.
No, that's right. But every case that we've had, Ms. Moran, at least I'm aware of, says we're following, you know, federal securities laws, and the statute, the state statute is patterned after the Federal Securities Act.
Actually, Your Honor, this court has departed from
federal securities laws,
in, for example, the Joseph versus Viatica case. And that's the important point here, is that we're not talking about federal law here. We're not talking about federal policies. We are talking about Colorado state policy.
So the whole public policy is simply the right of a Colorado investor to basically be vindicated in the Colorado court. That's what your argument is? It's not on the definition of a security and whether the whole act applies and all that stuff.
Williamson
exceptions and so forth, right?
That is the right, to have the right to bring this action in Colorado. And again, being a matter of state law, it's a matter of determining what the state's public policy is.
Before you wander away from that point, could I have you then circle back to Justice Ide's question? If that is the basis, then does it not follow then that any forum selection provision that chooses a forum somewhere else would necessarily be void because it wouldn't permit the action to be brought in Colorado?
It could be void, but what I think is protected here is the choice to bring the action in Colorado. And so
a one-way forum selection clause? I mean, the plaintiff has a choice, is what you're saying.
Yes.
It has a right to bring it in Colorado, but it may bring it somewhere else? Is that's what you're saying?
Yes. But the plaintiff could choose. And without a forum selection clause...
And that's why I want to go back to the very basic procedure here. So why was this a motion dismissed for lack of subject matter jurisdiction?
I'm not sure it was the defendant's motion.
But why would that follow logically? I mean, talk to me about that, if you would, please.
It's not really a subject matter jurisdiction issue because I think
But that's the way it's been presented to us, isn't it?
Well, it's kind of a little bit stands on it. A form selection process stands on its own.
Sure, what should we call this?
What else is there?
I mean, that's the way the motion was filed. It seems to be that's the way it was argued at the district court. What is this procedurally that's happening here?
It's similar to subject matter jurisdiction.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's looked at in
so does
much
do the Colorado courts have jurisdiction, but they just shouldn't exercise it? Is it sort of preemptive? Is it a choice of laws? Is it a conflict of law question? Is it? Can you help me with this a little bit, please?
Well, first, if there's a forum selection issue, the initial question to be decided is this the forum where anything should be done?
But not as a matter of subject matter jurisdiction.
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
That was a question I just didn't think too much about.
But can you tell me why we didn't? I'm not asking that cynically. Why? How did this case just develop the way it did and get up to us the way it did?
Well, there's a motion to dismiss. Hmm?
Based on lack of subject matter jurisdiction.
And a number of other issues were raised as well.
But that was the ground upon which the case was dismissed.
Yes, and that was the only issue that the court reached in any of the motions to dismiss, although there were 12B5 and so forth, because having decided it was not the proper forum, it dismissed the case. That from that we appealed, the Court of Appeals reversed.
But just one more follow-up. I'm sorry, but you're basically saying that there's a public policy in Colorado that securities claims, there's a right to bring the security claim in Colorado, correct? That's your public policy?
And a right not to be forced to take it somewhere else.
Okay. But then I don't understand why you would say that wouldn't a forum selection clause that permitted you to go somewhere else violate that public policy? Should you, I guess I'm trying to figure out why should you even be able to bring it somewhere else? Doesn't that violate the right that you've defined?
Well, the plaintiff should be able to bring it somewhere else because there may be other laws that the plaintiff wants to proceed under. For example, another state's securities laws. Here we have several states. The choice was made to sue in Colorado. The defendants are here in Colorado, so that's the logical central place to be rather than Vermont or Illinois or somewhere else.
Could I ask that question, just turned over here, just turned around slightly. If a party has a choice whether to change forms and therefore has a choice about waiving, have they not exercised that choice by voluntarily entering into a contract that chooses another form?
Well, the entering into the contract that forces another form deprives the choice. So yes,
they made a choice to deprive themselves of a choice? Was that it?
Well, there's are issues in the
seems like an adhesion contract.
Yes, which haven't been reached. The Court of Appeals didn't find it necessary to go that route about whether the clauses are unreasonable for other reasons.
And obviously what I was trying to get at there was one might interpret our statute to say you don't have a choice. But you seem to be arguing that the plaintiff does have a choice. It's just about whether they could have exercised that choice earlier and be bound by it, or whether they get to exercise their choice at the time in which they file.
I'm a little confused. The choice to enter into the agreement with the forum selection clause?
Yeah. Is that not a choice? Is that not a choice to about where to have the action brought?
I would say that if the contract, in contravention of the policies of the Securities Act, restricts the plaintiff's choice to enforce their action in Colorado, there's no choice to enter into that. It's a void. It's void under the anti-waiver clause.
I'm sorry, we're taking up a lot of your time on this one. So these out-of-state people bought securities which were sold here in Colorado. Mm-hmm. They subjected themselves to personal jurisdiction in Colorado when they came here and sued. Okay? Defendants come in and say, that's well and good, but because you bought these securities, the securities say you have to sue us in Texas. And Texas says that's where, quote, exclusive jurisdiction is, which is kind of an odd. And contracts don't create jurisdiction. Would you agree with me with that?
Yes.
Okay, so the court then says, well, let's figure out whether I have subject matter jurisdiction, but it's not really a question of subject matter jurisdiction. It's interpreting this contract provision, which essentially is a choice of form provision kind of disguised as an exclusive jurisdiction mm-hmm. clause, right?
Correct.
So you don't disagree with anything that I've said so far. So why is this a motion dismissed for lack of subject matter jurisdiction? And I'm just confused about how this all happened at the district court.
Well, I think it probably...
Everybody, I beg your pardon, I have one more thing to say, excuse me for interrupting. Everybody is just taking for granted that the provision in the security that says Texas has exclusive jurisdiction really means subject matter jurisdiction?
I don't think it's taken for granted, but it's sort of a question of what else to call it. It is a threshold issue.
But you do agree that a contract can't create jurisdiction?
No, it can't.
So what should we call it then?
Well, it's not change of venue, really, because it's more than venue. I think it has to stand on its own as a threshold form selection. Issue.
Well, if it's a forum selection issue, then, I mean, it really is kind of something different, isn't it, than the way the case has been presented to us?
Well, I think that although the label hasn't really been put on it, that we have followed the analysis of everything we know about forum selection clauses and when they're enforced and when they're not enforced. And that's all been presented, and we haven't put it into a neat category or a procedural context, but I think it's all there.
Okay, thank you.
And you're relying on that California case, the Hall case, as
yes.
an example.
As an example, yes.
That, you know, especially in a situation where the defendants are operating out of Colorado, it seems kind of... untoward to have to go to another state, does it not? I mean, all our venue would vest it here, including the choice of the Securities Act to provide a forum to investors. So it does come down to the cause of action and whether a particular provision will be suspended. You know, the provision is still there for other causes of action, I would imagine, but this is a Colorado securities case.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is, Your Honor, and that kind of gets to the heart of the Court of Appeals concern in this case, is that by purporting to place this action in Texas, and I think there were probably reasons for that from the defendant's standpoint, is that threatens to deprive the plaintiff of the ability to bring a Colorado Securities Act claim because of the Texas choice of law provision that says these contracts and how they're applied and how they're interpreted are going to be governed by Texas law. And Texas does take a different view of joint ventures and whether they are or are not securities, and looks largely to the written instrument rather than to the economic realities of the situation. There is no, contrary to what counsel has said, there's no guarantee or anything more than speculation that the Texas court would apply how Colorado looks at such contracts.
But if we get past that, why couldn't the argument be just as simple as this, that by buying these securities, the plaintiffs, irrespective of where they choose to sue, decided that the appropriate venue for resolution of this was Texas?
I'm sorry, that if we decided the appropriate venue was Texas?
No, if the plaintiffs, by buying the securities, which had this, quote, jurisdiction provision, but actually decided that the appropriate venue was Texas, and why can't they contract for that?
Because when the violation has occurred and it comes time to sue under Colorado or other states' laws, those statutes come into play and give, in the Colorado Securities Act case, the choice to the plaintiff.
Right, but you're almost saying that the Colorado Securities Act keep the plaintiffs from making bad choices about contracts they enter into, which might, and these contracts might carry with them the consequence of them having to file in Texas as opposed to Colorado. But nonetheless, that's just free contracting.
Well, it's not an informed choice here because knowing that the Colorado Securities Act may be applicable to them or may give them remedies down the road doesn't help the plaintiffs at the time they are contracting, because the defendants told them these aren't securities. And so I don't think forum selection clauses, when you're talking about a statutory cause of action that prevents you from waiving rights under that statute, would require you to have the foresight to look ahead and say, you know, I've been told these aren't securities, but if I agree to this forum selection clause, I'm waiving my rights under this act that I don't even know applies because I'm told these aren't securities.
Why are you waiving your rights under this act?
I'm sorry?
Why are you waiving your rights under this act?
The plaintiffs are waiving their rights under the act because the act, just as in Landon, Morris, and Engle, the act, like those acts, gives the plaintiffs the right to enforce Colorado statutory rights in Colorado courts. Another provision that also gives the plaintiff the right to bring this, or indicates certainly that these actions should be brought in Colorado courts, are the provisions that give Colorado courts long-arm jurisdiction over defendants, out-of-state defendants, and more importantly, the provision that requires security sellers to consent to service of process on the commissioner as their agent. And as the Bremen case said, that's a consent to be sued in a particular jurisdiction. So the defendants have consented to be sued in Colorado.
Well, the defendants work here in Colorado. I mean, there's not even a question here. The people who have consented to bring the suit are the plaintiffs who don't live here in Colorado, right?
Yes.
They've come here and subjected themselves to jurisdiction. So we don't really even have a question of personal jurisdiction.
The defendants happen to be here, but if they can be served through the commissioner, they've consented to suit here. So they've consented to suit here.
Sure. So this is just simply a subject matter jurisdiction question, not a personal jurisdiction question. That's the way it was brought up.
Well, there aren't any personal jurisdiction questions here.
None. So in light of that, if you could answer more specifically, it would be helpful to me. The last question, I think, is Justice Hobbs's question.
Can you bring me back to that?
Well, I'm glad with this discussion, because it seems clear there is subject matter jurisdiction in Colorado. The question is whether a contract provision is going to be enforced under these circumstances where there's a securities claim. If it wasn't a securities claim, we'd be in Texas. But I think your argument is, and you look at the Hall case, the overwhelming public policy of the securities law in Colorado is to provide a forum for Colorado residents in particular to argue that it is a security. And the concern is that a Texas court may not agree it's a security under their general partnership law. So to me, the question is, really comes down to a specific enforcement in a particular kind of cause of action complaint that alleges that this is a Colorado security. In which case, the whole policy of the law, which is the administrative as well as the forum to bring the suit and to have a Colorado court look at this, is what we're talking about. Isn't that right? I mean, was represented to these investors that this is not a security, right? That is the defendant's position.
That is one of the violations that's argued among several, yes.
Yeah, they're not conceding that this is a security in any way, is it?
No, they haven't, and we haven't come anywhere close to reaching that question because of the posture of the case. So I would agree with Your Honor that is the concern here, is providing a forum for Colorado Securities Act claims to be heard. That was what the Court of Appeals was concerned about, and I think the Court of Appeals found all the right things for all the right reasons, that this forum selection clause, because it takes the plaintiffs out of Colorado courts where they have a right to enforce these Colorado Securities Act claims, that that violates the anti-waiver provision, and for that reason, it's unenforceable.
Counsel, I'm sorry, if I could, I'm going to blend this in.
Oh.
If I could follow up on that, I'm a little bit confused about the position you're taking, because you seem to be saying that really what's at stake is the opportunity to litigate the claims here in a Colorado court. But the concern also seems to be that because if they're not litigated in a Colorado court, we're worried that Texas won't apply Colorado law. So how much of the argument is in fact intertwined with the choice of law provision in this particular agreement? And I raise that because, according to the Securities Commissioner's amicus brief, they do seem to be intertwined, and I'm wondering, do you adopt that same position? It's the 1-2 punch, if you will, in this particular set of agreements, the choice of form and the choice of law provision that creates the problem, or are they distinct?
They're distinct in this sense, is that we have kind of two positions. One is that the right to enforce this these Securities Act claims in Colorado courts is in the statute itself, under the way that the Landon and Morris and Ingold courts have looked at similar statutes. And the other part of it is that taking, enforcing the choice of forum clause together with the choice of law clause, and they can't really be separated, and a number of courts have said this, is that these operate in tandem to prospectively waive statutory rights. And that's what the U.S. Supreme Court said in the Mitsubishi versus Solar Chrysler Plymouth case, is that when a choice of law clause and a choice of forum clause operate in tandem to prospectively deny statutory rights, well, that's against public policy.
Well, and the reason I'm a little bit concerned about that is because the Court of Appeals in its analysis made very clear it was not addressing the validity of the choice of law provision. And it seems from that argument that, in fact, and I think the Securities Commissioner invites the court to void them both. I'm just wondering, can you void the forum selection clause without actually voiding a choice of a law provision as well, or are they necessarily a package deal?
I think in this case they do go very much hand in hand. I mean, procedurally it's a little difficult here because the trial court decided the forum was inappropriate, it couldn't go any further in looking at the choice of law. So that, as a practical matter, has to be decided first. But I think the choice of law provision and how it operates in the context of the choice of forum clause has to be part of the analysis. I mean, you can't separate them apart because it you know, as the Court of Appeals concluded, could have a very deleterious result to the plaintiffs here. If the court has no further questions, I would ask that the Court of Appeals decision be affirmed and the clause held unenforceable. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Moran. Rebuttal?
Chief Justice Bender, you hit on the precise issue when you asked Ms. Moran about rights. Because, and what rights would be waived, because their whole argument is that the Securities Act gives them a right to sue in Colorado and the anti-waiver provision precludes waivers of rights. But that's not what this anti-waiver provision says. The Wage Claim Act anti-waiver provision said you can't waive rights. The Security Deposits Act said you can't waive benefits, which I think is similar to rights. That's not what this anti-waiver provision says. And in fact, in Landon, this court specifically recognized the distinction between a Securities Act anti-waiver provision that just precludes waiving compliance, which the court in Landon, in discussing the federal version of that, which is identical, said does not preclude waivers of procedural rights like where to sue, and contrasted that with the Wage Claim Act anti-waiver provision that did preclude parties from waiving rights. So that's a distinction that worked in favor of the plaintiffs in Lambden. It works in our favor here. Next point. Justice Hobbs, it would not remotely be untoward to enforce a Texas form selection clause here. That form selection clause was put in place in a contract that created a Texas joint venture, a Texas general partnership for the purpose of investing in oil wells in Texas, Alabama, and Mississippi. So there's a direct connection. Next point, the choice of law provision that they argue is a gigantic red herring in this case. The choice of law provision in this case, very important to have this clear, in no way precludes a Texas state or federal court from applying the Colorado Securities Act. It would not prevent that. The choice of law language does not say anything about the Securities Act. It does not purport to supplant the Securities Act. We have stipulated over and over for 3 years, in these august surroundings, I hereby re-stipulate unequivocally that the choice of law provisions do not purport to supplant the Colorado Securities Act. The language of the choice of law provisions here is essentially the same. It is the same as the language in the Hughes case, which is cited in our brief, Southern District of New York case. What happened in that case was a Colorado Securities Act claim was brought in New York. The defendants moved to dismiss based on a New York choice of law provision. That choice of law provision was virtually identical to the choice of law provisions here. It said that the agreement was to be construed, enforced, and governed under New York law. And the court in New York denied the motion to dismiss because it said, no, that choice of law provision does not preclude a Colorado Securities Act case. It just doesn't purport to do it. And this is a key distinction.
Could I just interrupt you for 1 second? I mean, so where, I understand that the security indicates that the quote, jurisdiction is going to be in Texas, but where from that, how do you go from there to say that Texas is precluded from applying out any other choice of law than Colorado?
Well, those paragraphs have some language that deals with the governing law, mm-hmm. and some that deals with venue. I mean, some of the language says venue, some of the language says jurisdiction. I agree with Your Honor, it's not, the parties can't create the power of the court, but sometimes they use that.
But really, what I just really want to know about choice of law, because so say the case, is transferred, or again, it wouldn't even be transferred. It would just, if it were going to exist at all, the plaintiffs would have to refile in Texas. That's your position, right? Okay, so Texas now has this case.
Yes.
Plaintiffs wouldn't come in and say, we originally filed this case in Colorado. Colorado dismissed it, but we want you to apply Colorado law, Texas.
Sure.
What would give them the right to do that, and what would make the Texas court do that?
Because the complaint they would file would have several counts, and one of those counts would be a count under the Colorado Securities Act, just like they filed separate counts, and the only law that applies.
But Texas then could say, well, under Texas law, we would look at this situation, i.e. the definition of a security one way, and under Colorado, they might look at it differently. You're bringing this claim under the Colorado Securities Act before we're going to apply Colorado security law?
Absolutely.
That's what you think would happen?
Absolutely. Just like with respect, if there were no form selection clause here and their Vermont Securities Act claim proceeded, the Colorado court would analyze that. I see my time is up. May I finish your question? The Colorado court would determine that based on Vermont law construing the Vermont Securities Act.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
I want to thank both attorneys for your briefs as well as your arguments. The case will stand submitted.